Hello, and welcome to this episode of Ask a Physical Therapist on KDNK. I'm your host, Dr. Tanis Kitchener, and today Dr. Caitlin Tyvee is joining me. Welcome back.
Thanks.
So today is going to be a bit of a unique episode, and Caitlin actually is going to interview me. So we're going to bring you a patient perspective, and I'm going to share a personal story and a personal experiences regarding breast cancer for breast cancer awareness. So if you're listening to this on a playback, we're recording this in October of 2024, so in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and another date in October, which we'll chat about. We bring you this personal patient perspective.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being willing to share, Tanis. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. So I'm really excited to talk to you about this because it's not often that we as providers get to step into the patient role and be transparent about our experiences. So thank you in advance for being vulnerable and sharing this story. I guess I'd love to start and just hear or tell everyone about your family history of cancer and how that kind of evolved for you in your own health journey and thinking about your health.
Mm-hmm. So my maternal grandmother, my mom's mother, died of cancer in her 20s, mm-hmm. breast cancer. And she had three daughters, no sons. And her oldest daughter, my aunt, was diagnosed with ovarian cancer at age 39. And passed away at 44. And so that was in 2004, I believe, when she passed away.
Okay.
And so the genetic testing for the BRCA gene had just really come out and become available for folks. And she was set up to do it, and then she was deemed terminally ill.
This was your aunt?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And so she was then denied the insurance was not going to pay for genetic testing for somebody who they had deemed was not going to live much longer.
Got it.
Which was a little unfortunate because at the time it was quite expensive.
Yeah.
And if they identified exactly where in the genetic code the mutation was, then the rest of the family could get the genetic testing done out of pocket for cheaper because they would go right to that known zone of mutation.
Right.
And so with my aunt having the cancer, we had an idea that she, if we had a genetic mutation in the family, she was going to show it.
Got it.
So what ended up happening is after she passed away, my mother did the genetic test.
Okay.
And she came back positive for a mutation in the BRCA1 gene.
Got it.
Which significantly increases your risk for breast and ovarian cancer. The stats are a little variable, and I should have looked this up before I came in, but I believe the more accepted stat is like 87% increased chance of getting breast cancer in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then my mother, and after that, she tested positive. Then she knows every child of hers has a 50% chance of inheriting the mutation.
The gene, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and just to be clear, everybody has a BRCA gene.
Right.
It's just a question of what your genetic code is in that gene. And
yeah.
So if you have a particular genetic code for it that doesn't match what we would consider the wild type or the normal type, it's considered a mutation, which increases your risk.
Got it.
Yep. And there's BRCA1 and BRCA2. Both increase your risk of breast and ovarian cancer, but the amount that it increases your risk of each is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some increased risk of other cancers, peritoneal cancer, I believe colon cancer, and a few others.
Got it.
And it's important to know that even men can get breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the risk of it potentially increases if you're a male with the BRCA gene.
Right.
Right. And you can pass it on to your kids. So there's always a question of should men get tested as well.
Sure.
And it's a personal choice, but if you know that you're increased at risk because of your family history, then I would strongly consider it, whether you're male
or
female.
Sure.
So after the testing, my mom chose to do a preventative hysterectomy.
Got it.
But chose not to do a preventative mastectomy. So a hysterectomy removes the uterus, and if you do an oophorectomy with it, it removes the ovaries.
Yeah.
So that is a prophylactic surgery to prevent ovarian cancer.
Yep.
Which puts you into menopause.
Right.
And, immediately. So she chose to do that and chose not to do the breast removal surgery with it, which is a mastectomy,
mm-hmm.
and chose just to do really vigilant monitoring.
Okay.
So within 6 months of a clean mammogram, she found a lump and it was stage 3 breast cancer.
Wow. Quick.
Yeah. Cool. She was 44 years old.
Quite young.
Mm-hmm. And so she fought cancer with chemo, radiation, all this stuff for about 3 years, and she passed away at 47.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And she was otherwise very healthy. So in my family history, it seems that cancer diagnosis is usually pretty aggressive.
Mm. People get diagnosed in later stages in your family?
Yeah, later stages, and it moves fast.
It moves quickly.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I had the genetic test done after my mom tested positive, but before she had any signs of cancer.
Sure.
And it was positive.
Okay.
So I was positive for the mutation, which means I was at increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer along with others. And I was 22. Okay. No, that's not true. Let's see. Yeah, 22. And so that meant that you just do increased screening.
Yeah.
And so at the time, when you're that young, typically your breast tissue is quite dense.
Yeah.
So rather than doing a mammogram, I had a breast MRI done.
Got it.
Which interestingly showed an abnormality in my lung.
Mm-hmm.
Breast tissue looked fine, no concern, keep monitoring it. But something is odd in your lung. Let's investigate that.
Yeah.
And it turned out I had lung cancer.
In your 20s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which had started based on pathology results and past medical history when I was like 18.
Had been already going for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was really fortunate that it was well encapsulated, so I didn't need chemo or radiation, but I did have to have part of my lung removed and go through that.
And you were in your mid-20s by this time?
I was 22, just before my 23rd birthday. My mom threw me a surprise 23 and cancer-free birthday party after
my
surgery.
At least she had a sense of humor. All right.
That was a wild ride to tell my mom, who's lost so many people she's loved to cancer, that her
23-year-old daughter, has lung cancer.
Yeah, my first year of grad school. So that was a ride.
Exciting to go through in PT school. Yeah.
So with that, I ended up having to do a lot more chest CT scans, chest x-rays for 5 years, monitoring for return of lung cancer.
Sure.
Which then increased my radiation exposure to my breast tissue that was already increased risk.
Right. Okay. So when you did this testing around the time after your mom found out she was positive, did any of your siblings do testing as well?
Yeah. So I have 3 younger siblings. I'm the oldest of the 3.
Okay.
And they won't do any testing till you turn 18.
Gotcha.
So I was the first one to do the testing. And my sister, who's quite a bit younger than me, eventually did testing as well. And she's positive.
As
so
well.
She's been on the same journey.
Okay.
My other aunt was negative. So that was fantastic because she doesn't have to face a lot of these questions. What do you do when you find out you're positive?
Right.
So... yeah, and my brothers, one I don't think has had the testing done, and I can't remember. I think my other one's had it done, and it's negative.
It's negative, okay. Mm-hmm. But he chose to do it as a preventative because, like you said, there is a risk for men. So when you were all of you were young and looking for testing, how obviously your mom had been through it, so she knew a little more than the average person, but how did you go about even finding someone to get tested with?
You go through a genetic counselor typically. This was before there were direct-to-consumer testing available on the market. So we didn't have 23andMe yet. We didn't have Color Genomics. So there was one company that had the patent. I think it's considered a patent, but it had some restrictions. No other company could do it.
Got it.
So you had to go through a particular company, and a genetic counselor had to do the testing, identify your risk to determine whether you should even have the testing done.
Okay.
And then go over the results and help you come up with a plan of action.
Okay. What did that look like for you when you sat down with the genetic counselor? besides the lung cancer.
You go through the family history and they were like, yeah, there's no question that you're appropriate for doing this
for testing.
Genetic testing. Yeah.
Got it.
And then they go over, after they get the results, about, you know, stats of your increased risk of this kind of cancer is this and this kind of cancer is this. And these are the doctors you see to come up with the plan for monitoring.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I didn't follow up much with them after that because they kind of handed off. But I have had some follow-ups as time goes by because this was a long time ago now, almost 2 decades ago. And so there's more research coming out to say, okay, now what do we do differently?
So I'm curious about that part. So obviously you made it through this really harrowing journey with lung cancer in your 20s, which was probably made you grow up very quickly, I would imagine. After you were declared, as you say, 23 and cancer-free, what do the next few years look like up until, let's say, your next big procedure?
I have to get through grad school.
Fair, which is an endeavor, yep.
Pass my PT boards and get my first, like, real job in my career. Met my now husband, and at age 28, I chose to do a preventative mastectomy, so removal of breast tissue. And the my kind of thought process on that is, I'm young, I'm not married yet, I don't know if I'm going to have kids, so I'll leave ovaries for now.
Sure.
Because risk of that is slightly lower. Knowing my grandmother passed away in her 20s of breast cancer, that felt a little more urgent.
Sure.
So I consulted with some surgeons and picked a team and did a mastectomy with reconstruction.
Okay.
I was 28-ish. And so that was my initial, okay, now besides doing, sorry, I should say in the meantime, I was doing annual breast MRIs to check the integrity of the breast tissue.
Got it.
To pick up anything that was abnormal.
Got it. This is a great question because a friend of mine runs a local nonprofit that's all about breast cancer awareness in women under 40. And we were discussing recently how hard it is for younger women to get exams, whether it's a mammogram or a breast MRI. And how was that process for you to get approval for your breast MRI every year in those intervening times?
Well, once you get the BRCA testing done and it's positive, it becomes a little easier. But not much. At the time, there was two issues. One was that we didn't have, it was still totally legal and acceptable for insurance companies to deny coverage for somebody with pre-existing conditions.
Right.
So you have the question of, is genetic testing then give you a pre-existing condition? Also, I had lung cancer in my 20s. And so when I had to go out on the free market, and the first time every insurance company I applied for coverage, they had a question of, have you had cancer in the last 10 years? And when I answered yes, they said, sorry, I can't help you. Luckily, I was able, because I was under 25, to go on my mother's health insurance, who was a government employee, and so she had good coverage. But even then, they would not they wouldn't cover a breast MRI unless you had a positive or an abnormal mammogram.
Got it.
I didn't have an abnormal mammogram, but the tissue was too dense for it to be a very appropriate diagnostic test.
Right.
So I think I might have ended up paying out of pocket for the MRI the first time, but I had an amazing doctor who was just such an advocate, and she worked with me in any way she could to
Help you get covered. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That's such a battle, especially in your 20s, because most people don't maybe have the resources for that.
I try to remind everybody to be mindful that insurance coverage, despite pre-existing conditions, is so important.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it till you do.
Till you need it. Exactly. Yeah. So you made the decision to have the preventative mastectomy and reconstruction. And then tell us a little bit about what happened after that. After the reconstruction?
Yeah, so I was in my 20s and I chose to do reconstruction. And so I ended up doing silicone implants with expanders. So what they did is they removed the breast tissue and then they dissected my pec muscle off my rib cage.
Mm.
And then they put expanders between your pec muscle and your rib cage to expand that space.
Okay.
So they slowly kind of fill that up with saline every week to a couple weeks. They expand it and stretch out your pec muscles.
Interesting.
And then I think about 6 months into it, I had those removed.
Okay.
And then I had another procedure and they put silicone implants in.
Got it.
They might do it a little different. I think they're doing more direct to implant surgeries now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing more above the pec muscle, directly under the skin surgeries now. But for that, that's what I did. And also they had to place a tissue called alloderm. So it's like a cellular matrix to help hold the underside of the implant in because my pec muscle wasn't large enough to cover the whole implant.
Got it. Okay.
So they were technically experimental at the time. They called them gummy bears. They were like a semi-solid silicone implant. So it was after the silicone implants came back on the market, but were technically supposed to be under study. So they were still getting more information about them.
Sure.
and this is, now I'm skipping way ahead, but about 9 years later, I found out that they were both ruptured.
Got it.
They're supposed to be like bomb-proof, right? I'm in my 20s. The doctor asks, what do you like to do? I'm a scuba diver. I'm a snowboarder. I fall on my chest all the time.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I do, I trained in Krav Maga, so contact, which is like a martial arts, so contact sports.
Yeah.
And he said, great, we have exactly the thing for you. These are kind of anatomical shaped. They're, you know, all these things.
They're durable.
They're durable. And it turns out that they actually ended up being recalled because they can cause a type of cancer.
Mm.
And I ended up finding out that they were both ruptured 9 years later. So an unknown period of time, I've had these things in my body that are potentially leaking silicone.
Got it.
Which can be really damaging.
Yeah.
There's also a thing that most providers will say doesn't actually exist because the research doesn't support it, but there's a community of folks who claim that they suffer from autoimmune symptoms due to breast implants, and it's called breast implant-associated illness.
Hmm.
And I don't know that I had that, but I did at some point end up with thyroid issues, hypothyroid, more symptoms of autoimmune stuff.
Sure.
But there were a lot of other things that had changed in my life during those years, too. So I don't know what's what.
Right.
But, at some point, it seemed to make sense. They had to come out because they were ruptured.
Mm-hmm. Obviously. Yeah.
And then I went on a new journey.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about that. You'd already been through several chest surgeries, which I think when as PTs, we were both thinking about all the implications that can have and stretching out your pecs and what that can do to your upper body function. How do you feel like by that point when you had the implants removed, how did you feel like your physical condition had changed, if at all, or had been affected?
I forgot to add that it turns out I flipped an implant diving off the top of a houseboat. So I had to have another procedure to correct that.
Got it. Before the removal.
Yeah. So 9 years in, I was already three procedures in for that was supposed to be, you know, two max, and they were supposed to be good for 20 years.
Right.
And yeah, my pec muscles are never the same.
Okay.
There was limit one. I was starting to limit some of my activities because of concern of rupturing, or flipping a implant.
Yeah.
Two, my pec muscles were just never quite that great.
Right.
But overall I felt like I could function quite well.
Okay.
Until they were removed. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can breathe so much better now.
Because
they restrict your chest expansion.
Sure. Okay. Something that you maybe like didn't even know until it was back again and you realized. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it.
And I think there's a lot of women who have a lot more symptoms, but, you know, it was, oh, I can't. I tried to jump on a boogie board one time. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't work. I feel like I'm like flopping around on two boulders.
Totally. Okay.
You know, oh, I'm freezing snowboarding because it turns out silicone.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a lot of vascularity there when they remove your breast tissue and you just have these big balls of silicone that get cold when you're in the water or
cold environments.
Or whatever.
So okay.
Just odd little things, but nothing terrible.
Okay. Okay. So then, so you were coping okay, but then you had to get them removed because they were obviously, you know, dangerous. So then what happened? Tell us about the next journey from there.
So luckily it wasn't an emergency. I found out that they were ruptured, and that was a journey because I got a lot of resistance. I got a plastic surgeon who said, I don't believe these are ruptured. These are like bomb proof. There's no way they were ruptured. And he said, well, that's interesting. Will you look at the MRI with me? Because the radiologist says they're both ruptured and I can see the rupture in the MRI. And her response was, no, I'm not a radiologist. Okay. So you're going to do a physical exam that has a 50% or less reliability.
Yeah.
And deny it. And so she said, but they're too large for your frame. They've dropped a bunch, you know, we have other reasons that we could take these out and I could do a better job for you.
Okay.
So she was totally keen on surgery, but wasn't totally believing that they were ruptured. But luckily she asked for a reread by a different radiologist who apparently she trusted more. And she called me and she said, I can't believe I'm saying this, but they're both ruptured.
Got it.
So that started the journey, and I just knew I needed to think more about what I wanted. I was kind of disenchanted with the medical world as far as I had not received any notification saying that they had been recalled. The FDA was denying the they were not allowing the company to pay for women to have them removed. Mm. So they would pay, they would allow the company to pay for new implants, but they wouldn't pay for the procedure.
Huh.
So okay. Now you have women walking around with these recalled implants that can cause cancer, which is the whole reason they got them in the first place.
Right.
And the company is not even allowed to, if they wanted to, cover the cost of replacing them via
That's
the procedure.
Wild.
Yeah. And I actually, even as informed as I am as a healthcare provider, didn't know that I was supposed to be getting an MRI every year to check the integrity of the silicone implants.
Got it.
So I had had these ruptured implants. I don't know how long.
For how long, yeah.
It could have been for 8 years since the time it flipped. And I was just like, you know, I don't know that I want to have more surgery. I don't
right.
know that I want to set myself up for potentially more, another ruptured silicone implant mm-hmm. for... Even regardless, even at best case scenario, another surgery in 20 years to replace them again.
Right.
I want my full function of my muscles back, and then I want to call it good.
Yeah, and be done. Yeah.
And so what that led me to is to investigate aesthetic flat closure.
Okay.
Which means no reconstruction.
Got it.
Which was a whole journey. But I had time to kind of delve into, is that what I want to do?
Sure.
What does that mean for my mental health?
Right.
What does that mean for my femininity?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for my marriage?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell us, if you're comfortable, tell us a little bit more about like navigating that and maybe talking with your partner and mm-hmm. kind of talking with yourself about the identity changes that can happen.
Yeah. So it was a fairly long journey, but I guess that's relative. It took me about 6 months
okay.
to feel like, yeah, I know where I'm going to go. And
sure.
I have a provider that I work with who does a little bit of body work, a little bit of energy work, a little bit of spirit. But anyway, it's just a way to make sure I was grounded.
Sure.
That in a place that I could make these decisions from.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the question was, does my breast tissue provide the reasons that I love myself or the reasons other people love me?
Yeah, sure.
Like, are the people who love me going to still love me the same without
right.
breasts?
Right, exactly.
And obviously the answer was yes.
Of course.
So then the next question is, what importance do they carry? And is that outweigh my other priorities, which were no more surgery,
yep.
proper recovery in my muscles, no risk of a foreign body
exactly.
in my body.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's a downside mm-hmm. of not having breast tissue in
yeah.
our culture.
Sure.
You're losing, it's an amputation of sorts.
Sort of, yeah.
But to be honest, because they were implants, they didn't feel like my tissue anyway.
Felt a little
so
foreign.
So I'd already lost my breast tissue
right.
9 years earlier.
Right.
So anyway, it came down to the pros of not having implants mm-hmm. outweighed the cons of not having reconstruction.
Got it.
And there okay. are other options for reconstruction, but they usually involve affecting abdominal wall
yeah,
muscles or it usually affects other muscles.
Mm.
And I just knew I didn't want to affect my other muscles. As a PT, I see people who do that kind of thing. And
yeah.
usually they tend to struggle
for
various reasons. Yeah.
How was the recovery after the aesthetic flat closure? How did you feel?
It was all right. It was a little more complicated for me, I think, because I had had the implants.
Mm-hmm.
So there was space that my body was trying to fill. So I ended up with some swelling and things. But I think women who go direct to flat closure and they don't
yeah.
have implants, they have it a little
easier
typically. But it's variable.
Sure.
Okay. I should probably say that finding what I would like people to know is that aesthetic flat closure is an option.
Mm-hmm.
Finding a surgeon who will do it can be challenging.
Yeah.
Every plastic surgeon I talked to tried to convince me that I was going to be disfigured and depressed and that I shouldn't do this. That I, in order to be made whole and to feel good, I should have reconstruction. Which, to be honest, I'm so glad reconstruction was an option when I was in my 20s.
Sure.
And it should be an option that's paid for by insurance for every woman who wants it.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be presented as the only option.
The only option, yeah.
And it shouldn't be presented as the only option for women who have good mental health.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I see a lot of women get denial for it, saying, you need a mental health assessment to make this decision. You're going to change your mind, so we're going to leave extra skin just in case, and all kinds of bizarre things that are happening.
Yeah, Yeah. So it's a difficult thing to navigate if you're not a really strong advocate for yourself, it sounds like. Okay. One more question I had was, were there any side effects of these procedures that you had or other related surgeries from this whole journey that you didn't expect and you wanted to share with people to be aware of?
Well, in my 20s, I was surprised at how much I had to mourn the loss of the ability to potentially breastfeed future kids.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the surgery, I thought, oh, no big deal. I'll breastfeed. I'll bottle feed. A lot of people do that.
Sure.
And I was kind of taken aback by how much afterwards it was sad for me.
Yeah.
To know I couldn't do that.
Sure.
And then I would say that I ended up having a preventative hysterectomy with oophorectomy, and that mm-hmm. led to a lot more side effects than I thought.
Than you were expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
With menopause in my early 30s.
Totally, yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you just mention, you said earlier, the difference between a full and partial hysterectomy, or basically with and without ovary removal. Mm-hmm. Can you just clarify what the difference between those procedures is for the outcome for the mm-hmm. for the person?
So if you leave your ovaries, then you're not thrown immediately into menopause. Mm-hmm. You've got some estrogen and progesterone and things of that nature still happening. But because ovarian cancer is the risk with the BRCA gene, you really need to remove the ovaries. So
yep,
you don't,
in your case, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have the option of leaving the ovaries to prevent early menopause.
Right. So you just had to deal with it basically
yeah.
in your 30s. Got it. Is there anything else that you want to share with listeners about this journey or think people should know?
Well, just know that flat closure is an option.
Right.
And there's a lot of support groups out there and information now that there wasn't. So you don't have to feel so alone.
Yeah.
And find doctors and surgeons that you feel like are really on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the time, take it to figure this out.
To figure it out.
And yeah. know that, you know, it's easier to do the reconstruction at the time. But if you're not sure, you can always go flat or leave skin and then make a decision
later.
After you've dealt with the immediate cancer risk if you're currently going through cancer.
That's a great point. Yeah. Well, that's super informative. Thank you so much for sharing and being so open. It was wonderful to hear this story and hopefully help a lot of other people who might be going through something similar. So thanks, Tanis.
You're welcome. Thank you all.
Standing down on Main Street across from Mr. Blues, my faded leather jacket, my weather-broken shoes. A chill north wind was blowing, but the spring was coming on. As I wondered to myself just how long I had been gone. So I strolled across on Main Street, walked down a flight of stairs, stepped into the hall, saw all my friends were there. The neon sign was flashing, welcome, come on in. So good, feeling good again. My favorite band was playing an Otis Redding song. When they sang the chorus, everybody sang along. Dan and Margarita were swaying side by side. I heard they were divorcing, but I guess they let it slide. And I wished I had some money with which to buy around. I wish to cash my paycheck before I came to town, but I reached into my pocket, found 3 20s and a 10.